It was a tough partnership from the start, but now cracks are showing between civilian and military players in Sudan's transitional government. Is it on the brink? Where does this leave the drive towards democracy? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. A split is widening between Sudan's military and civilian leaders. An attempted coup last month has worsened tensions between the two sides. The coup was blamed on soldiers loyal to former President Omar al-Bashir. Pro-democracy rallies have been held in the capital Khartoum by supporters of the civilian leadership. Sudan's military accuses politicians of failing to govern effectively. Protesters have gathered in Khartoum. They say the army is trying to seize power. Mohamed Addo reports from the capital.
Familiar slogans from the protests of 2018 and 2019 once again echo across Sudan. In the capital Khartoum, hundreds took to the streets to express their anger at what they say is an attempt by the military to disrupt the country's transition to democracy.
We were expecting a speedy transition to civilian rule. We don't actually feel there is a transition to anything here yet. Today, there is no freedom, peace, or justice in Sudan.
Tensions between Sudan's military and civilian politicians reached a low point this week after the recent attempted coup. When it took power 2 years ago, the transitional government promised to fix decades of mismanagement, internal conflict, and international sanctions under the former president Omar al-Bashir. But it's yet to demonstrate to the people of Sudan that it can undo damage done by Bashir's regime, kickstart the country's struggling economy, and move the country towards genuine democratic governance.
What we need is to revamp and strengthen government institutions, especially our weak institutions of justice. Only then would we stop worrying about who rules Sudan.
Against all odds and most predictions, Sudan's young people have in the past built a peaceful and disciplined movement that saw the toppling of one of the world's most autocratic regimes, that of former President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. And as the transition in their country remains threatened by infighting and squabbling within the Sovereign Council, they're once again finding themselves trying hard to get their voices heard.
These protesters are also angry that families of those who died during protests 2 years ago are yet to get justice. Public discontent has also been mounting over economic reforms that severely reduced subsidies on petrol and diesel, more than doubling their price. The Sudanese pound runs on several official and black market rates and is depreciating, causing a loss of cash from the formal economy. These activists say nothing will stop them achieving a better way of life, and they will bring hope to a nation that's known little for decades. Mohamed Addo, Al Jazeera, Khartoum, Sudan.
Well, 3 years ago, an uprising in Sudan led to a revolution that forced its government out of office. Protests began in December 2018 over the rising cost of living. But they evolved into a wider movement calling for an end to Omar al-Bashir's 30-year rule. In April 2019, President Omar al-Bashir was overthrown by the military. 4 months later, the military stepped aside in favour of a civilian-led transitional government. Soldiers were accused of using excessive violence against protesters. In October last year, it signed a peace deal with rebel groups to end 17 years of fighting. It's meant to lead to elections in 2023. In February this year, Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok announced a cabinet reshuffle to push through reforms so the country can get international aid. Let's bring our guests into the show now. We have joining us in Doha, Salahuddin Azzain, an expert on Sudan and former director of Al Jazeera Center for Studies. In Somerville, Massachusetts, Alex DeWall. He's the executive director of the World Peace Foundation and former member of the African Union mediation team for Darfur, Sudan. A warm welcome to both. Let's start, if we can, with Alex. Why are people so worried about the transition in Sudan that they've come out on trains, some of them, from around the country to protest in the capital.
Well, the immediate spark for this was a report of a coup attempt about a week ago. But if it was a coup attempt, it was an extraordinarily amateurish one. And what it really revealed was not so much the fragility of the regime to the potential comeback of former Islamists, but more the power of the military within this delicate balance between the army and the civilians. One of the responses of some of the civilian leaders to the events was, we are more worried about the army supposedly in government, supposedly defending us, than we are about the threat of a coup maker. So what it shows is potentially that Sudan might follow the trajectory of its historic transitions back in 1964, back in 1985, where you had a civilian uprising, a period of democratic rule, and then the army took power once again.
That's a worrying precedent, obviously, for many civilians who want to see civilian rule. Salah al-Din, is the military and the civilian component in the transitional council, are they heading towards a collapse right now? How do you read the situation?
Thank you very much. I think the main challenge that faces the transition in Sudan now is the fragmentation of the leadership. There is, the whole setup was an agreement between the military side and the civilian side to share the burden of transitioning the country into a democratic era in 3 years and a few months. But then we started to see the cracks from the beginning. It started as a competition between the two sides, and then that developed into an open conflict between the two sides, I mean the civilian and the military. And the recent events that followed the attempted coup showed first that there are so much areas of disagreement between the two sides, and second, that within even the civilian camp, there is no coherent leadership. The division, the politics of division has inflicted a lot of damage to the civilian side that made the military side look more in charge. And I think what is happening now is that unless the civilian side can come together on an unified framework of how they're going to handle the different issues, from economy to the policy, to the politics, to the foreign relations, to the issues about peace, and so on and so forth. And unless they agree on a clear structure of leadership, they always find themselves very vulnerable in front of the military establishment. And I think the situation in the country, especially when it comes to the worsening economic situation, makes the whole issue now, the people look for a leadership, for people who can lead the country into more stability so that at least they can see a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think it all lies in the hand at the moment for the civilian side. But also, let us remember when we talk about the civilian side.
Is it all in the hands of the civilian side? Let me jump in here and ask the question perhaps to Alex. Are you reading any signals that the military actually doesn't want, as time goes on, that they don't want to transition towards civilian rule? They haven't set a date, or no date's been set, for even the chairmanship of the Sovereign Council to be transferred to civilians.
I think that is part of the fear. I mean, anybody who expected this revolution quickly to lead to a stable civilian government must have been very naive. In fact, in retrospect, the slogan of the protesters, which was Tazgut Bas, just fall, to President Bashir was perhaps simplistic. The challenges that face setting up a civilian government were immense. Let me just focus on the economic challenges, because The economy under the previous regime of Omar al-Bashir had become thoroughly corrupt. It was a crony capitalist system in which there was what many of the democratic activists called the deep state of the Islamists. But the deep state was equally the penetration of the military and security into almost every commercial sector, including also the paramilitaries who had arisen more recently in Darfur, led by General Hemeti, who controlled, for example, a lot of the gold trade. Now, in order for the civilian government to deliver on the aspirations of the people for cheaper bread, for employment, for lower inflation, for a better standard of living, two key things needed to happen. Number one is Sudan needed an inflow of foreign assistance. It needed to get off the state sponsors of terrorists, have the sanctions lifted, have its debt rescheduled, etc., etc. The international community was extremely slow in responding to this. So Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, a very talented and skilled economist, was essentially sent in to salvage the Sudanese economy, but with his hands tied behind his back. And that was the culpability there lay to a large extent with the internationals. The other factor, however, was that the military are not just a fighting force. The military also have an enormous control over the economy. They have a military budget that is completely out of control. There are military and security investments in all the key sectors. And until that can be dismantled, there simply is no level playing field for the legitimate civilian commerce to compete. And it will not be possible for the Sudanese economy to recover. So the civilian government has been fighting a struggle really on two fronts that it's very, very difficult for it to win.
I wonder, Salah al-Din, is there a third front? Are we oversimplifying this by simply looking at this as a struggle between military and civilian elements? When you listen to some of the criticism coming from both from some of the civilian parts of the civilian elites, as well as from the military, they say that even the civilian component of the Transitional Sovereign Council, the civilian government, it's been too narrow in inclusiveness to including all the political forces in positions. They've been busy, says the deputy chairman of the Transitional Sovereign Council, on distributing positions and carving up power amongst their fellow people rather than actually focusing on helping the civilian population. Is some of that criticism valid?
Well, I think that is absolutely correct. And if we look a few months back, Prime Minister Hamdok, when he addressed the nation and announced an initiative, the way forward, he acknowledged that there was not only the division between the civilian and the military, but there are also very deep divisions among the civilian side, which hampered the effort of the government. Because, I mean, if you look at so many issues that they failed to resolve because of these divisions, they failed to agree on civilian governance for the different states. They failed to agree on the composition of the different commissions that required by the constitutional document. They failed to agree on the establishment of the legislative body. All these because of the divisions among the civilians themselves, in addition to the disagreement with the militaries. And secondly, let us not forget that I agree with Alex that, you know, the situation in Sudan after the fall of al-Bashir was so complex, and it required that to build a broader coalition with a consensus on the civilian side to move forward. And unfortunately, these divisions did not allow the government to move forward because the issues are so complex. And Prime Minister Hamdok himself, yes, we agree that he came with a lot of expertise as a technocrat. But for him, coming from outside the country, being away for quite some time, he lacked a lot of knowledge about the internal politics and intricacies of the Sudanese politics. And to be the leader at this moment, without support from the forces of freedom and change, I think that also created a big burden on him. So the way forward requires to go back and try to build a broader coalition of forces that are really interested in transitioning the country into a stable democracy,
right,
and bringing in these different players so that they can work together. Otherwise, with all these politics of divisions that's going on in the country, I don't think it's the civilians will have a chance to succeed.
Given what Salah al-Din has just said there, Alex, do you think the country is on track, can get on track for a new constitution, for new election laws, for getting more armed groups to sign up for peace? Or do you agree with some analysts who I spoke to who said the civilian component, the civilian authorities themselves, are not in a hurry for new elections because they fear whether they could win an election and whether they have, as Salah al-Din said, some of them are seen as outsiders, spent most of their life outside the country.
Let's have no illusions that, of course, there are going to be these divisions. There are going to be these huge controversies. I mean, over the last 60-plus years, Sudanese have not been able to agree on the most fundamental elements of the identity of their nation, on what political direction it should take. And so to expect unity is unrealistic, to be frank. Where I think we can make important progress needs to be made is turning these discussions, these controversies, these debates into the bringing them into the within the formal system of governance itself. And I think setting up the transitional National Legislative Assembly is absolutely essential so that there can be some sense of democratic oversight and accountability over the actions of the executive, both the civilian and, even more importantly, the military, because so much of what the military has been doing and continues to do is operating in the shadows. I think also there is a misapprehension here that there could be a fixed and final formal settlement, a permanent constitution, a system of governance in Sudan that is going to satisfy everybody. What Sudanese have a particular talent for, and a very underappreciated talent perhaps, is continuing their national discussions in a very civic and open-ended way, so that we're not, as it were, in a transition to a future fixed permanent state, but we're in a transition to another transition, and endlessly Sudan will be evolving in response to changing circumstances, to the management of these radical differences in view about the nature of the country, the future direction. And the particular talent that Sudanese political leaders need to have is to keep that dialogue ongoing, to keep it civic, and to keep violence out of the equation. And that is a responsibility that falls particularly on the military.
Can they do that task, Salah al-Din, especially when you look at what's happening in some parts of the country, in the east, tribes disrupting pipelines, shutting down ports? You've got to wonder whether this government is actually mismanaging Sudan's very unity at this point.
This is, in my view, the reflection of the crisis of leadership. And the way the government, the transitional government, handled the negotiations leading to the Juba agreement created the condition that led to what is happening in the in eastern part of the country. And if it is not addressed in a proper way, it could lead to another part of the country also getting into trouble with the central government. So it is a reflection of the crisis of leadership that we are facing right now. Unfortunately, Prime Minister Hamdok, the military,
who wins, Salah al-Din? Who wins that crisis of leadership? Who wins then in the end? If you've got tribes trying to break away. You've got civilian authorities fighting each other. You've got the split between the military and civilian authorities. Who comes out a winner in the end? Is it the military?
Unfortunately, it might pave the way for the military to consolidate its power in the country, something that everybody didn't want at the beginning of this transition in 2019. The whole country was aspiring towards transitioning into a democratic civilian rule. But unfortunately, because of the mismanagement over the last 2 years, it seems that it opened the way for consolidating the power of the military. It is not going to offer a solution to the country, but that seems to be the way things are moving right now. Until I believe still there is an opportunity. If the political elite come together and realize that the only way forward is to establish a consensus around national agenda for transitioning the country and start preparing for a real democratic election in 2 years from now, or 2 years plus, and leave the country to move forward. Because at the moment, the whole debate seems to be moving back and forth around issues that is not really the core issues of transition to democracy. The politics of division seem to have taken over. Mm-hmm. And Sudan is the country that has a lot of experiences. I mean, from the time of the independence back in 1950s, we went through this process about 3-4 times.
Right.
And now the country, it has a wealth of experience that it can build on and move forward.
Right. Alex, you mentioned a moment ago some of the economic challenges facing the country. There have been some breakthroughs or some success stories getting Sudan off the sanctions list. But how much of that has really translated into real progress for the average man on the street when it comes to inflation, when it comes to debt, when it comes to subsidies, the exchange rate, the trade deficit, and so on?
All these things are moving painfully slowly. And I think this is the factor that is underlying the frustration of the people of the streets about the pace and the direction of the transition. That said, one thing that we are seeing at the moment is that people interpret the signals coming out of the military leadership, General Al-Burhan, General Hemeti, very clearly. They very clearly identify that there is a military threat to the civilian-led government. And even those elements on the civilian side that have been most critical of the leadership of Prime Minister Hamdok would undoubtedly rather have him than the military coming back. And as Salah Hadin said, there is a lot of experience in Sudan about managing transitions. There's also a lot of experience about the perfidy of military leaders who promise that they will have a shortcut to quick solutions, to national salvation. And they take power. And for a moment, they may be acclaimed because they appear to offer that resolve, that decisiveness. But actually, they leave the country more deeply into crisis. What I think at the moment is encouraging is that is the street aware of the issues? People are politically very conscious of the stakes that are in play at the moment, and the need to restore that civilian unity, that spirit of the revolution. But also belatedly, we are seeing resolve from the international community. We're seeing the U.S. Special Envoy in Sudan, we're seeing the U.S. Congress moving, and we're seeing the World Bank making serious promises.
Interest growing, yeah. Let's hope that they will be able to salvage the revolution. For now, though, let's thank our guests, Salah Hadin Zain and Alex De Waal. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. from me, Sami Zeidan, and the whole team here now, it's goodbye.